You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
Comrade Ellen and Comrade Bradley, I am here to tell you about this wonderful TV show on HBO. I have heard many reports that say this is the best TV show all year, but I know that these reports are lies and I want you to explain it more fully. Ellen, as my scientific expert, and Bradley as man that I found on street who is also somehow qualified.
Okay. Well, the lies, they come from lack of the Throne of Games, so HBO insists it has number one hit Good Time Show on hands, but it's clearly all a big elaborate ruse.
Okay, Bradley, you switched somewhere into Italian somewhere in that, which is really funny. It's like, hey, I'm from Russia!
Don't you understand? Game of Thrones is over. We're on HBO. Nothing like this has ever occurred on the planet where the most popular streaming service doesn't have its most popular show.
Well, all of our accents are more Russian, I guess, than the actual accents in the show, where it's pretty much just all British people in this show. But
oh, yeah.
Well, it's British people and then a Swedish dude. Actually, is Stellan Skarsgård Swedish or Danish?
Who knows? Yeah, Skarsgård. Let's go with Swedish.
Okay, yeah, I believe he's Swedish. So, yes, everybody, we are talking about Chernobyl. You may or may not have heard about this show, but if you have, you've probably heard nothing but effervescent praise for this thing. Like, literally right now on IMDb, it is like the highest rated TV show to come out in the last few years. Like, I think literally the lowest rated episode is like 9.6, 9.7 in the star rating.
Right.
Which, wow.
Based on a true story.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, apparently some people don't know that this was a true story. I'm looking at you, Bradley, and your family, I guess.
Wait, Bradley, you didn't know this was a true story?
No, he knew.
I was aware of it. I was talking about it with one of my siblings, and they were kind of like hinting that they didn't know what I was talking about. And I'm like, there's a TV show about that. And they're like, about what? And I say, Chernobyl. And they're like, Chernobyl what?
Aww.
I'm like, okay, well, we're not finishing this conversation.
That's such a weird fucking like thing that we're in a situation. That's like saying World War II?
What was that?
Well, that's the sibling wasn't even born yet, to be fair. But yeah,
neither was anyone in this room.
No, you're probably right.
Yeah, no, to be fair. I mean,
I was born. I was alive, but I was a toddler.
The whole thing about this show is that we do know a lot of stuff about Chernobyl, but this is trying to be an expose on the stuff that either we didn't know as well, or maybe some things that we've heard but got misinformation on.
Yeah, of course.
And yeah, basically that's the story of this miniseries. It's 5 episodes, basically just covering the major figures, either actual figures who are in this story or kind of like amalgamated characters, like Emily Watson's character, where she's pretty much just... Is it Watson or Mortimer? Sorry, which person is that?
Let's go with Mortimer Watson, because Emma Watson is an actress.
Sorry, Emily and Mortimer. There we go. I'm great at this. but basically, yeah. So she's kind of an amalgamated version of a bunch of scientists who are on this committee, and which at least in the end credits of the final episode, they acknowledge is like, yeah, we had to do this for dramatic purposes, but here are the actual scientists who she represented, which I thought was nice and respectful.
No, I've never seen a film admit to that before, or a miniseries in this case, so I was surprised.
Yeah, so basically it's her, and then we got Jared Harris as, what's the main character's name? It's,
Valery Ligosov.
Yeah.
Good luck pronouncing that, man, and I apologize to his memory.
Oh,
but
here we go. It's Valery Ligosov. There we go, because they said it
way better than I would have.
Okay, yeah. And then Stone Skarsgård character, who's Boris Sherebina, who was one of the head figures in the Soviet Union, or at least kind of like a middle manager, essentially. And so all these three people, through various circumstances, get brought into Chernobyl and Pripyat and all these places where the explosion happened. And it's just, not only is it the actual fallout of the actual explosion, but mostly, like, 80% of the story is all about the political ramifications of trying to deal with this, you know, national global catastrophe. And now the Soviet Union was just like, nope, nothing to see here. Everything's fine. Nothing's going on. There's no graphite. And... That's the thing that amazed me the most, is that for as big and explosive, you know, talk about the story, what makes it so interesting is that it's not just a gratuitous, like, watching people die story. It really is a political story wrapped up in this story about a nuclear explosion. And I'm shocked that it's as good as it is, especially when you look at the credits of the people behind this movie. Now, to be fair, on the one hand, you got the director here, Johan Renck, who is a experienced music video director. He did most of Madonna's videos back in the day. He did David Bowie's last music videos. He directed that series, The Last Panthers. He directed Breaking Bad episodes, Vikings, the premiere of Bloodline, that show that introduced us to, oh gosh, what's his name? Well, it was Kyle Chandler and Ben Mendelsohn. That was Ben Mendelsohn's big breakout show.
That first season was really good, by the way. Check it out.
Oh, it's great. Now, on the other hand, we got the writer here, Craig Mazin, who's... if you look at his credits, okay, let me just tell you the other stuff that he's did, that he did. He did Scary Movie 3.
That he done did, yeah.
He did Scary Movie 4, Superhero Movie, Hangover 2, Identity Thief, Hangover 3, The Huntsman, Winter's War, and then he's writing the new Charlie's Angels movie.
Oh, God.
So, literally, this is the only thing of note on his entire resume.
I don't even, like, this, you know what this fucking proves? This proves that thing of, like, a director can sometimes be way more important than a writer.
Well, you know, and that's the thing, that the writing here is actually not bad. It's really, really good on the whole. But it is, it does feel a lot like the director took charge of this, saying, no, I have a very specific vision on how to film this. And he does. I mean, just to say this, I mean, I'm going to apologize early on. I literally have almost no complaints about this series, so I'm going to just say a lot of great things I love about this show.
And I'm going to apologize, too. I have a lot of complaints about this series.
And you're very wrong.
No, I'm not. Now stare at this cat for 30 seconds.
Well, see, okay, I'm going to say this. That's one of the things I want to address, first of all, is that this show, I think on almost every front, is just gorgeous to look at. Like, it's got this great, muted, you know, very specific color palette where... it's very desaturated, but at certain points, certain colors will pop out very prominently in shots. You know, like faded greens, reds, orange, you know, whatever is necessary for the tone and mood of this thing. I think it's just a really, really good-looking show on just about every front for cinematography, production design, and costumes. I mean, does anyone disagree on that in particular?
No, 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 100%. Like, they managed to nail the gray. Like, the tone they're going for is, like, this kind of gray, almost like, this place is already kind of fucked up. And then we see later in the series the juxtapose of, like, hey, this is the good part of this area, and it looks normal, and it makes it, like, wow, this is what this area looked before it got fucked up by this, like, explosion. So it's like, yeah. As far as production, it nails it.
Yeah. Bradley?
No, I agree completely. Everything here pops with purpose, from the background to the environment to, as you pointed out, just in the wardrobe. Actually flows very well through the scenery, especially in dire circumstances. Everything is just colored beautifully.
Oh, yeah.
And beauty in the apocalypse is a rare thing to see in film, and I think it goes all the way with it, and it's beautiful.
Though it does make me realize how different 80s wardrobes were, because when you see the outfits that the, the nuclear power plant workers wear, I'm just like... are they nurses? You know, and I'm just
never
like...
trust anybody dressed entirely in white. Midsummer had a trailer, and all those crazy cultists were wearing white. These guys are all wearing white. 100% white wardrobe is not to be trusted.
Don't forget about Saruman in the films too. All white.
Can't exactly. He betrays them instantly.
Yeah, so it's very 80s, but at the same time, it's not like reveling in 80s nostalgia. It's just a very, it's very matter-of-fact almost entirely throughout this story. It's just, this is how they look, this is how they acted, this is what the technology looked like, and it's, I think that translates a lot to a lot of the directing, writing, and acting of this movie, too, because I gotta say that the three main performers here, Jared Harris, Stellan Skarsgård, and Emily Mortimer, all three of them are fantastic throughout this whole thing. Like, it's funny because I've only seen Jared Harris in so many projects because he usually gets like supporting roles and that kind of stuff. But he's a great leading man in this series. I mean, do you guys agree?
Was it are you saying Jared or Boris?
No, Jared Harris. He's the gossip, the main guy.
Yeah.
No, the main character there.
I think he needs to get ready for his phone to blow up because Disney is contacting him now for Fantastic Four casting, for X-Men casting, for their next Marvel casting. He's going to be flooded in offers. It could be good. It could be good again.
No, if anyone that gets called for X-Men, just be like, wait, am I writing the movie? Then click.
No, but he's great. But then yeah, Stellan Skarsgård is the guy, Boris Sherbina, that character.
Yeah.
It's funny because Stellan Skarsgård got that thing with his voice where he sounds like he choked on a bunch of gravel before he starts speaking in almost every single line. But he's got a great character arc throughout this whole thing where he's normally the guy who's like, oh, yeah, you scientists, you don't know jack about what you're talking about. And then at the end of the show, he's like, oh, I guess I was the moron here, you know?
Yeah, you well, definitely, one of the things I did like about it is, like, you're dealing with a lot of the stuff where it's like, yeah, people do people still have never trusted scientists in any way, shape, or form. So when all these scientists are telling you, hey, you're a bunch of morons, it's like, it's one of those things where if anyone that's watching this that doesn't really know anything about politics or the rest of the world, they'll be like, oh man, look how dumb these Soviets are, look how dumb these Russians are, this would never happen in good old America. But as somebody that's in the scientific field in Canada and has seen stupid shit like this happen on Canadian soil, this can happen anywhere. That was one of the more terrifying things as a scientist watching the show, of seeing all the political maneuverings. Just that is just normal for any fucking country.
Yeah. No. By the way, it's Emily Watson.
I fucked you up. Yeah, My apology.
Okay. Yeah, it's Emily Watson who I was thinking of. So I was not too far.
I thought maybe she got married and they didn't update her IMDb page. No, I'm sorry, man, I should have said something.
There's three.
I should have spoke the truth.
Yeah, there's three great actresses with very similar names. I'm like, okay,
the lies destroyed us.
But yeah, I think it's always refreshing to see a scientist as a good guy, because it is a rarity. I mean, and to put a pin in your point, for like 5 years, the leading study and representation on vaccinations was a Playboy model who was on an MTV show once.
Do not get me started on it.
Okay, yeah, okay. I didn't say any
don't
names.
Get me started.
But that's why I think it's good that media as a whole, and hopefully people as a whole, are starting to gravitate back towards experts in their field for truth on
that. Well, because the thing is that, on the one hand, yeah, we got people like Jared Harris, which, to be fair, in real life, he's not actually a nuclear physicist, but he was close enough that he knew the basics about how nuclear physics worked, kind of thing. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, he may not be a nuclear scientist, but he does have the experience needed to make a statement on it. But then you got other scientists who are working at the nuclear plant, and oh my gosh, that main dude, Dyatlov, the head of nuclear power plant, who wanted to punch him in the face, like, hardcore throughout this
Well, immediately as soon as the giant explosion and your boy runs in with his face covered in red, and it's like, you're delusional, maybe. It didn't explode. I don't know. What, my face? You think I went to the fucking microwave? Like, put two and two together, man.
I know. So that guy's played by Paul Ritter. It was just so funny. I remember seeing this meme that was being passed around. You know the Change My Mind meme that was going on?
I love that shit. That
yeah, so they had one with Paul Ritter's face on it. Just like, you don't see graphite because there is no graphite. Change my mind.
The reactor didn't explode.
It was a fire, you know? Put some water on it, you guys. Gosh.
Well, because that's the thing is that you got those guys who are the officials, because they're like, oh, well, I run the power plant, so everything I says goes. But then he's the guy who's the most delusional and the most in denial, because he realizes if he was responsible for this explosion, I mean, forget imprisonment, he'll probably just get shot by the Soviets, you know, for that stuff.
Oh, no, he knows. The thing is, he knows, because if he is wrong, then hey, it doesn't matter if it's a simple explosion. If he's right, then he's dead already, because he understands radiation enough to know that we're fucked. Because, like, he's sitting in a room right now, and you love the production design. I love the sound in this fucking show.
Oh, it's great. Yeah,
they scare the shit out of me because of what I know about Geiger counters.
Oh, seriously, but, like that's one of the things they use prominently throughout this show, especially the end credits. They only play the Geiger counter sound effects.
Yeah.
And it's just so haunting and creepy and menacing. Almost everything in this in the sound design works so great to that effect.
Yeah, which is great in scenes that there's zero lighting. But yeah, like that character, he knows that if he just prays that he is like that didn't happen, because if it did happen, he knows thousands of people are already dead. They just don't know it yet.
Well, like, even the people to the coming point out, when he is dead. Dying, like literally his hair is falling out, he's coughing up blood and lungs and that kind of stuff, and he's still like, nope, nothing happened, I didn't do anything, nothing went wrong.
Yeah. But he's like, oh, radiation leak. It's like, hey, if it's just a radiation leak, yeah, he can deal with it. He might, maybe at worst, he'll get fired or demoted. But if this was actually an explosion, so it's like, as much as I was like, man, get your shit together, I almost understood why he was acting that way, because he just is praying to be wrong.
Yeah, but no, sorry, Brad, what were you going to say?
Well, it's drilled into him that the Soviet Russia, that you don't make mistakes.
In
you
Soviet are correct Russia, and, nuclear yeah. blows you. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my goodness. No. But yeah, there's no mistakes, because the power plant can't make a mistake. and that's more important to him than reality, or whether it was, you know, drilled into him by fear or by actual, what's that word Americans use? Patriotism.
That word Americans
use. It's hard to
Nobody
hard
else
to say,
has ever used patriotism in any context other than Americans. Absolutely.
I mean, to be fair.
Russian patriotism is such
I apologize.
That's such a big thing in this movie. I mean, the show, actually.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, that's one of the big things where it's all about duty. It's about the idea about, you know, the power of the government and the country to pretty much change the world. You know, and again, like you're saying, in the face of reality, the Russians are willing to say, no, there was never a nuclear explosion. Nothing happened. Nothing's going wrong. You guys are just crazy. Oh, you coughed out a lung. Oh, boo-hoo. You know, kind of stuff like that.
You got two.
What a strange random coincidence that has just happened. You know?
Yeah, so that's the thing. It's just, this is really all about, I mean, in some ways you could say it's specifically anti-Soviet in a lot of ways, because it's just showing what caused the collapse of the Soviet Union. Other than just Chernobyl, it's the way they handled it, where literally they caused the single most disastrous nuclear fallout incident ever. You know, the only major one.
Well, the thing is, and I 100% agree, I don't even disagree with what you're saying, I just don't believe this is anti-Soviet, because if you think about it in the States, it's almost the exact same fucking thing. It's just we're not dealing with nuclear reactors, like, as a centerfold of the energy crisis here. Like, if the Hoover Dam just blew up tomorrow, like, there would be massive ramifications. Because of just how much, three states would just lose their fucking electricity, like, right then and there.
I mean, well, we couldn't really hide that, unfortunately.
Absolutely. And I don't think they would, there would be some politicians that maybe would be ridiculous about it or feel they were doing the greater good by downplaying it, but it would still be all over. No one would be kept in the dark about it.
I fundamentally disagree with that.
See, because the way that we report stuff in America, I don't fully... I mean, and again, it's not to say there isn't corruption in America, but there's some stuff here that's very specifically targeted at Soviet ideology, including the biggest thing when Jared Harris presents to the committee at the end of this series, the whole thing about how they were spending money on the nuclear reactors. It's like, yeah, you know why we didn't do any of this stuff? Because it was cheaper to not do it, you know? And that was a big thing, that the Soviet Union was very big on saving money. And that was one of the big reasons why the reactor was built the way where it did this whole backfiring on them. And so again, you can interpret it in a lot of ways, but I do see where there is some ideas. It's like, this is what causes a country to collapse. You know, this is what causes 100%. It when you get faced in the face of real world problems, how you respond to it is even worse than what actually happened in the actual event. But yeah, you know, other than that, I just got to say that, man, there's so much good about the show in terms of pacing and that kind of such, which I know this is probably where Alan's going to come in with a few thoughts of his.
Oh, good. I'm waiting for the word pacing to...
Okay, let me just say this. This is a slower paced show. It's very talky, but when it's not talky, there's a lot of visual artistry going on with, like, you know, sweeping camera angles, landscape shots, haunting images. And for some people, Alan, they may be a little bit, annoyed with that, personally.
Anyway, I'm just gonna fucking jump right in. When this show is talking, when Jared is on fucking screen, he is, like, that is the fucking show. Because he doesn't really show up till the second episode, when they've already dealt with everything in episode one. But my problem with this show is I feel like this show had 3 episodes worth of content that is stretched over 5. Because when they're doing their politics, when they're doing their talking, when they're trying to solve the problem, this show is A+, best show on television right now. But in between that, it is large landscape shots of empty houses, people running into buildings, running out of buildings, and I keep making the joke, let's just stare at a cat for 30 seconds, because that literally happens.
It wasn't 30 seconds.
It felt like 30 seconds.
But here's the thing, is that I don't feel like there was a wasted shot at all in this, because the really big thing is that this is a horror show. You know, it's a horror show built upon real-world terror. And I think that's one of the big reasons why they had so many visual sequences of showing how much this terror just affects everybody. You know, when you see that there's that one part where it's raining nuclear dust on the children in that scene, and you're just like, oh my gosh. Because then you see the stuff that happens afterwards, and where they're like, oh yeah, by the way, none of the people on the bridge survived after that bit. And you're just like, ooh, you know?
No. And some of the stuff is necessary. Like I said, again, one of my favorite sequences in the entire show is when they're like, hey, you three, you need to empty the fucking water. Okay, let's go in.
Tick, by the way, you might die.
And then it starts screaming. Yeah. And then it starts screaming. And that's how the episode ends. I was like, okay, they already, I don't know how the fuck, like, I don't know if this is a spoiler, but those motherfuckers making that shit, and I don't know how the hell they did that, because that screaming Geiger counter is like, if you know anything about radiation, and this show tries to teach you as much as it can about radiation, by that point in the episode, you know these motherfuckers are dead. Well, so the fact that they walked out of there is amazing.
No, even funnier, two of those guys are still alive today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, only that's the whole big thing just, that the Soviet Union reported, like, oh, these three brave men went in and died for their country because they're patriots. And then you find out the real story. It's like, no, only one of them died, like, literally, like, maybe 7 years ago because of heart failure stuff. But the other two, still alive. They suffer from the nuclear radiation, but they're still alive.
Oh, I'm sure they do, yeah. But, yeah, it's like, the show is able to do a lot of good stuff, and it's able to do a lot of different things. Things that you don't normally expect from these kind of docuseries. It's just, I felt that it didn't have enough material to extend its, like, because it's like, it's, again, this is a 5 hour series, 5.5 hour series, and I feel that it was, it had 3 hours worth of content. Because when, again, when Boris and Jared are talking, it's great. When they're at the courtroom, it's great. When they're trying to solve the problems, like, and he's telling him the number, like, well, how much boron sand do you need? 5,000 tons. Shit. When they're having that entire discussion about boron sand, it's great. When Emily Watson's character comes in, it's fucking dope. But there's so much, like, the entire dog sequence, I'm sorry, it was not necessary.
Okay,
I'm going to say straight up, it was
that part, I got to just get some setup. So there's a whole sequence, episode 4, where because they literally need to do, like, a mass purge, essentially, of the area that's contaminated, they recruit, I think they said somewhere like 370,000 people to serve for that. And there's a whole sequence that follows, oh gosh, what's his name? The kid from Dunkirk.
Oh, hey, was he in Dunkirk? Yeah, he just got cast as the new Yorick, isn't he?
Yeah, from Why the Last Man. It's the main kid from Dunkirk who died in the boat.
Killing of a Sacred
Deer. Oh, that's
going to
be Why the Last Man.
That.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
I know, right? He doesn't look like Yorick, really. But the guy's name is Barry Keoghan. There we go. Yeah. So it follows him, where literally one of their orders is, yeah, all the animals in this area, kill them. Kill every last one. And there's a whole, you know, again, it may be shown as being gratuitous and overly like, oh, it's so sad they killed all the doggies and all the kitties and that stuff like that. But it's true. It's exactly what happened, you know.
And that's fine.
Personally,
that's
Alan,
it
set the mood and pace of how mercy works. Go shoot that dog. So, whoa, what a jerk telling me to shoot a dog. And then as it plays out, you find out that guy who's trying to get everyone on point to kill these animals is a man of mercy. And don't you think that's kind of amazing?
No.
That doesn't work in a that doesn't work though in a 2 minute sequence where he goes, kill all the dogs. Poo 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 poo.
Okay,
you know,
but my
like
issue with that is
it would be ruined if it was quick, is what I'm saying.
My issue is that the next episode, like the last episode, I think that episode 5 is fucking amazing. I think that's probably one of my favorite episodes next to 2.
Yeah.
The thing is, that dog sequence, it feels like it was added there because, like, just said, oh, this is a realistic thing that happened. Let's go this because we can be as gratuitous as we want, because they have some, like, really gratuitous fucking, like, not gratuitous, but very visceral radiation sickness people, because they show a bunch of the people. It's like, yeah, their fucking skin's falling apart. They don't have eyelashes. Yeah,
this is some of the most like horrifying and grotesque makeup work for nuclear radiation poisoning I've ever seen in my life. It's scary beyond belief.
I cannot believe they got away with it, but, like, that whole sequence with the dogs, I feel like was like, man, we can get away with anything. Let's have a 15-minute sequence where they shoot a bunch of dogs. But it never felt like it added anything to the show. It just felt like it was there because we had to talk about it at some point.
I think, again, like the underlying tone is kind of what Brad is saying, but it's really about, I mean, because also at the end of each episode, they had those, like, you know, making ofs and the commentaries with the creators and as such. And the way they explained it, at least, is the idea about, you know, this was literally a point they had to conscript people who weren't soldiers to go and do this work. And just how demoralizing and horrible it is, you know, whether it's war or just this whole thing, it's just the same level of terror and, you know, soul crushing terror, you know, like sadness kind of thing.
And I think they were able to nail that in different scenes. Like when they have the sergeant, I think it's episode 3, when they're having the sergeant having to, Boris, Jared, and the sergeant are explaining that, and they're doing the robot scene. I think when they got the robot scene and had to have the conversation afterwards, I think that was much more haunting than the entire dog sequence.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just subjective.
Yeah, you might not be wrong.
It's full
of haunted imagery.
Oh, 100%.
The ending sequence of episode 4, sorry to interrupt, but that ending sequence of episode 4, the final shot, is still disturbing me to this day. And maybe it's because, you know, I'm a dad, but oh boy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change any drawn out, boring and office scenarios or nursery scenes to take away from that final shot, you know, so.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I'm saying. There's purpose to these lingering shots, my point.
Well, and so there's a lot of other, like, subplots and side characters. Like, there's a character that Adam Nagaitis plays, Vasily, that main fireman who goes into the reactor.
Oh, yeah.
And all the stuff surrounding him and his wife being played by Jesse Buckley, that's just so... I mean, it's part of what you talk about, Brad, with that final shot. All that culminating subplot is just so freaking sad. Like... Mm-hmm. It's these characters who I don't really remember all that well for like their names other than looking on the page here. Just seeing what they go through is just one, you get angry because you're like, they literally told you to put on these suits, lady, first of all. But then even then, you're still like, man, it's just it's horrible. It's horrible to watch what happens to them.
I kept about to say this, but once again, I got to be a downer because I feel that character again, I feel like that character's entire thing was utterly unnecessary because they have much more horrifying situations. Like, again, the other two characters dying like in the most horrible way I've ever seen, the people running into this water that's like fucking screaming at them, the fact that they have to sit there for 90 seconds and as they're throwing graphite in there, and how like that she would seen it as long as it needed to be. Like, there were so many other character subplots in this show that were so much better than just having this kind of this basically dumbass woman who doesn't listen to anyone's instructions.
Okay, but here's the thing, too, is that on the flip side, I will say that nobody knew the extent of what happened to those firemen because they weren't being told. You know, that's the whole thing with that wife, is that nobody told her what happened to him, so she didn't, you know, even though they said, don't do anything, it's like, oh, come on, they're over-exaggerating. So you get frustrated at her, but at the same time, it's like, well, if I didn't know what happened at nuclear power plants or nuclear radiation on that level, I wouldn't know, like literally touching this dude would cause me to, like, you know, do this, you know?
But a doctor, especially in the 80s? Yeah, people were still listening to doctors like they were fucking priests. So a doctor tells you... Yeah, what's up?
This was still the point when the doctors are starting to get challenged in their authority a bit. You know, kind of all of academia was being challenged, like, post-60s and 70s range kind of thing. And, you know, so it's kind of that weird conservatism that affected not just America, but also Soviets and the British and that kind of stuff, too. But
the average citizen was still dealing with doctors to
age. You say that, but this is a real person that really didn't take the doctor's
advice. All the story with them actually happened. Like, that's literally
even if we take let's take that out. That did happen. Obviously, I can't be arguing history. I'm not that stupid. But my thing is that it being in the show, like, it did not need, again, it was one of those moments, like the dog scene, that was just added for extra gratuity, just extra, like, look how sad this is, where I feel like other moments in the show were just as effective than having to, they dedicate a lot of time to that couple, a lot of fucking time, and honestly, like, again, when Emily Watson's character shows up in that hospital to do other stuff related to the plot and just bumps into her, it's like, okay, it was so unnecessary to plot that in order for you to connect it back in, you had to get a main character to bump into her.
Well, again, that's the way that they have to handle script writing at this level kind of thing. But, I mean, it's one of those things where I don't mind it as much because that guy was supposed to be representative of all those firemen, and he had the most highly publicized story because of the tragedy behind what happened to him and his wife. So it's like, okay, we kind of have to condense everything that happens to each of these people through this one couple. And so I'm not angry at it. It is highly convenient how they meet up in that one point, but I mean, again, this is just how stories work sometimes. And again, Emily Mortimer is a, you know, consolidated enough character. Sorry, I keep getting mixed up. So Emily Watson, she's such a consolidated character that's like, oh, I just assume any one of those 12 or 15 scientists she's representing may have met this character kind of thing. So yeah, there's that. But, you know, on the whole, I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can nitpick in terms of like subplot stuff, but honestly, I don't know. Like, I still like just about everything. Even, there's that one guy from The Witch who plays one of the military commanders in here. And I always love anytime he speaks because he's got, like, one of the deepest, gravelly bass voices I've ever heard.
Oh, is that one of the ones that was, like, on trial?
Well, no, it was during the episode 3 and 4 where he's coordinating all the soldiers and he's like, you know.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, you know, get ready, everybody, because we have to do whatever. And he's just got this deep, throaty, gravelly voice. You're just like, oh, man. Again, all these people who seem to just gargle gravel before reading their dialogue. It's really funny.
Man, the fucking miners are dope.
Oh, and the miners, you know, actually, that's one of my favorite, like, because they're only in one episode, I think, episode 3, but they make such an impact. And even even little stuff they do kind of is very representative of the whole political message of the movie, where they get introduced through the, I guess, what is it, like the Minister of Coal as part of the whole thing. And there, that one scene really encapsulates the whole point about how, you know, for a nation that's very devoted upon the struggle of the working class and Marxist philosophy, the working class are the ones who get, you know, screwed over the most in these situations. And they have to bring these politicians down to their level because it doesn't really matter the ranks anymore. Because it's like, yeah, either we all do this or we all die kind of thing.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And yeah, I really liked so much about this. And I feel like, again, I know there's some things I could intellectually argue and see your point on, Alan. But when I think about everything else about this show that I think is just A-plus material, I honestly don't have any complaints. Like, I literally think this is the best show I've watched all year so far. But, I mean, are there any other points to cover before we start wrapping up?
No, I think we covered every important detail.
Yeah. I will say this, too. I really like the music in this. It's a very kind of atmospheric, haunting score in the background kind of thing. And it's very... it's used sparingly, which I liked a lot about this show, you know?
I understand.
Yeah. No, I love this guy's name, too. It's Hildur, oh boy, Guðnadóttir. Oh, I'm just like, that is about as Scandinavian as you can get.
As you can get. Holy shit.
too many umlauts and too many accent marks in there. But any other points, Brad, before we wrap up?
Well, I will say, I do agree with Alan on some points of the show. There's a sequence where they're cleaning a Jeep. I'm sure that's a brilliant scene, too.
Like, yeah, the Jeep scene.
But 3 to 5 minutes into this Jeep washing, I turn to my wife and I'm like, I don't get it. And, you know, she's like, sometimes a Jeep's a Jeep, honey. Just keep watching.
Oh, wax on, wax off, man.
Yeah. So now, if the people from Cobra Kai were watching that Jeep, they would have watched that really quickly.
Yeah. Well, there was like 6 guys cleaning it, wasn't there? And it was just...
yeah, they're trying to clean the radiation off of it, but it's like, holy shit, speed it up, buddy. Like, we gotta show
it
to you.
Well, I mean, how fast does it take to wash off nuclear radiation from a Jeep?
I don't know. It's a show. How fast does it take to edit a cut to which they start cleaning it, they finish cleaning it?
So, yeah. Oh, and I do think the Geiger counter is the new da-na-da-na from Jaws, so that's pretty neat, too.
Oh, yeah.
No. Air horn.
Dude. Again, that ending sequence from episode 2 where they're walking in through the irradiated water and the Geiger counter's screaming at them, like you said, that's definitely one of the scariest scenes I've seen all year, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And, sweeping up the award season, so I think we're all decided on that. Oh, it's going to get it. The world decided on that.
I sure hope so. Like, I've been seeing a bunch of the prediction sites that haven't fully put it on their radar yet, but I'm like, that better change freaking quick, you know? Like, this, you know, especially for miniseries, like, for the short series kind of stuff, it's like, what's this real competition? True Detective? Black Mirror? You know, kind of stuff like that, so.
Black Mirror's never going to beat it.
Well, I mean, well, I guess Black Mirror is definitely TV movies, so that's a different category. But anyways.
I think Black Mirror is too mainstream now, and so are its ideas. Oh, snap.
I mean, it won the last 2 awards for TV movies, so it's not that main. I mean,
oh, did it? Well, San Junipero is a good episode. I don't remember.
Yeah, San Junipero and USS Callister.
Sorry, is a good episode? It is the best episode of Black Mirror. You put some respect on it.
I just don't understand the logistics of it.
But, okay, we're not talking about Black
Mirror. Anyway, sorry.
Alan will talk about that later this week. So.
Yeah, you got to join us on the Black Mirror Season 5.
But, so, Bradley, why don't you start us off with your final thoughts about the show?
Well, I enjoy a good romp through history. A lot of times, whether it's on the page or on the screen, the writer has trouble balancing the realism, the boring as hell facts and dates, the not so exciting science or subject matter of it, with the drama and the feeling and the emotion of what happened. And I think this show perfectly walks that tightrope. I'm not going to give it an arbitrary rating. I'm saying this is a masterpiece and you should see it. And if HBO ever does release Blu-ray again, I think you should also purchase this.
Yeah, they better freaking put out a Blu-ray for this. Like, I can't believe how much they've been like, oh, you just want DVDs because you're all watching digital, right? It's like, give me my freaking Blu-ray or 4K copy.
Yeah, no, I'm being good. Real mean about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm waiting for the day when the apocalypse happens and nobody has media. You know, me and Chris are going to be those guys in our regions. Just like, you want a Blu-ray? Here, I got it.
No, I want some food.
Well, okay. Outside of that, Food first, media later. There we go.
Food, water, Blu-rays.
Yeah. Nah, books, man. Those will never die.
Well, okay. But
what, are you going to plug in your 4K Blu-ray player to the wall?
Perhaps a rousing tale from a bard?
Well, anyways, Alan, do you have an arbitrary rating in Final Thought?
I have an arbitrary rating, and I do have final thoughts as well. As far as my rating, I think that I love history as much as ever. I love documentaries. I love docuseries as much as anyone does, especially something that's incorporated into something that I had a little bit of history about just because I knew about it just based on my field. So I was really, really excited because I'm like, hey, Chernobyl, radiation, all that shit's like that shit's really fucking interesting, as horrible as it is to learn. But the first episode, it didn't grab me. And it was just, again, I spent too much time doing the landscape shots. And I'm just like, no, get me to the politics. Get me to the conversations. Get me to solving this fucking problem. Then episode two happens, and that's when Jared shows up. Like, okay, every word that guy says, he's the most dramatic man on earth, but he fucking nails every single time he speaks. I'm like, cool, I want you more. And he does stay in more and more the episode. And as it went on, it was less and less, but it did feel times it was dragging on because it's trying so hard to just get every single detail it can in, stretch out every single scene. I'm like, literally just looking up at my ceiling, just get on with it. And I feel like when it's doing its thing, it's talking, it's doing all this shit, it's, again, one of the best shows on there. When it's not, I'm checking my clock waiting for the fucking next scene to happen. So as far as my rating, I'm going to give it a specific rating of 3.66 out of 5. And for anyone that's watched the show, they know what that number means.
Well, 3.6 is out of what? I mean, 5 watts.
Out of 5.
Five watts, though.
5 faulty Geiger counters.
Well, I could not... Well, I mean, it's not that I fully disagree, but those things didn't bother me very much. I got where the director was going, was to really convey the horror and the tragedy, like showing it in a very beautifully sad way, you know, through all the visual shots. And it is slow, it is ponderous, but at the same time, I kind of like the balance of having those slow, quiet, no talking moments to all the political intrigue, because that stuff, the quieter moments, really sell the terror of what's going on in the sequence. Like, there's one shot in particular when the firemen go to walk into the reactor, and it's that shot of them walking through. You can already see their skin starting to peel and turn red. And you're just like, oh gosh, you know, that whole sequence, episode one. Yeah, I will only say that one choice that was weird, it wasn't really enough to knock a point down. The opening scene of the whole series is literally the ending of the show. Like, that was strange. Like, I listened to the behind the scenes on that, were like, well, I mean, the whole point was, it's not about how it ends. You know how it ends. It's about watching how we got there, ultimately.
That always bugs me, because it's like, yeah, not everyone knows these stories. That's why you make these series, so that people can condense history into like a couple hours.
Sure. I mean, I guess I understood in the sense that it's not about the gossip, like that character. It's not about him. Yeah. It's not about Cherubina. It's about everything that this event meant to everybody in the world. And so it was a strange choice. I wouldn't have done it that way, but again, this is me trying to act like the filmmaker. But on the other hand, I think this is, like Bradley said, I think this is a masterpiece. I think this is one of my favorite miniseries I've seen in a while. I think all three of these lead actors are great. I think the supporting cast is great throughout this whole thing. I hope this gets a lot of Emmy love. It's really just that freaking good, the entire show. And I don't know. I even with the slower parts, even with the parts that seemed like they didn't seem to go anywhere, they almost always did in the end. So I got to be honest with my gut reaction. I think this is, 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10 nude coal miner workers.
So many penises.
There you go. For the people who want fairness in male representation, there is one scene in episode 3 where they just lay it all out on the table there for you.
So many male penises everywhere.
I will say, too, the one thing that made me super, super sad, concrete funerals. Is there anything more sad than watching your loved ones being buried alive? Well, not alive, but buried completely head to toe in concrete for the funeral? That's just so sad.
I can think of a few things, like at least they have a body.
Well, to be fair, they will never decay properly, or they'll have a slower decay rate, probably.
That's not how that works. Radiation would actually decay faster.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we don't have to see it then. That's the good news.
At least there's an unmarked memorial that you could know about. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hard times.
Hard times.
I'm glad that nothing bad has ever happened since, huh?
Let's just end this recording with a Geiger counter screaming.